Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend. This is the book show, which I think we need now more than ever. And our panel is here to bring us the most interesting, entertaining, and really vital books to read. Some of them will be new releases, some not. I'm delighted to welcome, as always, Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. She is the Youth Services Manager back at the Whetstone Branch. And Chris Hickey brings us each week, each month, the quick picks, those books everybody wants to read. Nick White is an author, a raconteur, a professor at The Ohio State University. His choices are always really interesting, as is Cassie Rose, without whom there is no show. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her blog, which is important to anyone who loves to read, is thelongestchapter.com. I do want to begin with Chris Hickey because I know there's news from the library. And then you'll give us a quick pick.
Yes. So the library, Columbus Metropolitan Library, is part of the Central Library Consortium. So what that is a partnership amongst 17 other libraries in Franklin County and the surrounding areas. So Westerville is joining us, and we're delighted about that. Now, they're still an independent library system, but what this means is that we share a catalog with them. Worthington, Upper Arlington, Bexley, Pickerington, all of these libraries, customers will have access to the different materials that the libraries own. Now, in order to make that happen, we have to shut down our catalog and migrate all of Westerville's data. And so what that means for customers is this weekend, our catalog will be shut down. Now, you can still come to the library. You can still check out. We have a kind of behind-the-scenes system at work. So you will come to staff. We will check out things for you. You will not be able to place holds. You will not be able to check out culture passes during this time. And your account is going to look weird for a few days. So you could say like, oh, I've returned things. You have returned them, but they're sitting in a pile in the meeting room because we can't check them in yet. So if your account looks weird, please don't fret. Give us a little bit of time because hopefully on Monday we'll be up back and running, and it's going to take us a little while to check everything back in.
Everybody who works for the Columbus Library System is nothing but helpful. So I'm sure you all have extra work on your hands getting that done, but that just means the reach is going to be expanded.
Exactly. So and if you've never been to Westerville, I highly recommend checking them out. It's a wonderful library.
Does this mean that if we have a DVD that's like due like tomorrow, that we can just keep it through the weekend?
You
or maybe
can.
Monday?
And you're going to get a couple extra days with your with that book you've been reading. So just hang tight.
So put your feet up and watch and enjoy.
Enjoy. Don't
that
fret.
That was a personal question. I have a couple DVDs
yes,
that were due
you can
yesterday.
Hang on to that. You can return. You can certainly return things if that works for you. If you want to hang on to things, we will not be mad at you.
And speaking of not being mad, how about a quick pick from the Columbus Library? First, give us very quickly a rundown of what quick picks are.
So quick picks are the hottest books. There's long hold lists. And the idea is this is a collection that will be sitting on the shelf when you come in. You can see the book you've had on hold. You can grab it, check it out, and you basically jump the line. So one of the hottest books this fall that is now a quick pick is a book called The Pumpkin Spice Cafe by Lori Gilmore. This at the time we added it to the quick pick, there was 700 plus reserves on this book. Hot. I mean, it took me ages to get my hands on it. So this is not a new book. It came out in 2023, but the comfort level and the fall atmosphere of it, it just exploded. It's basically Gilmore Girls in a book. It's a trilogy, so she has some other books.
And her last name is Gilmore.
And her last name is Gilmore. And so it's about a woman named Jeannie. She is a city gal, and her boss dies at his desk. And she, you know, do I want this to be my life? No. Her aunt wants her to come to this small town named Dream Harbor, of course, and run her cafe. So she comes to this small town. And her first night, she lives in an apartment above the cafe. She hears a scary noise, goes to investigate, and there's a hunky farmer at the back door giving his deliveries. Oh, the hunky farmer. The hunky farmer. His name is Logan, and there are sparks that fly. Now, it is a small town, quirky characters. She's not sure she wants to stick around. Logan has been burned by one of these city women before. He's not sure if he wants to risk his heart. It's just sweet. There's a fall festival. There's food. There's just funny people. And is it an original story? No, it is not. Does that matter?
No.
It is fall in a just a sweet pumpkin spice latte of a book. I read it in September when it was still hot, and I was so desperate.
You mean hot, like, the weather?
Hot, yeah, the weather. Yeah. Like, no, this book is hot, but like hot the weather. And I so desperately wanted sweater weather that I dove into this book, and it was just delightful.
How many chili peppers would we give this book in terms of like hotness? Like out of five?
Maybe
four out of five?
I mean, there's like things that happen against walls.
Oh, wow.
It's very good.
Very nice. All right.
So we have a book that's comforting, that's beautiful, and hot at the same time.
Yes, The Pumpkin Spice Cafe by Lori Gilmore.
Get on the list because it's long. But if you walk into any branch of the library on a Tuesday morning when the new ones are put out, it might be there.
It might be there.
Take a chance.
Yes.
This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy, and we are going to talk more about books with WOAC's book critic, Cassie Rose. So top that, you know, cuddly. Let's go.
Well, I don't think I can. But I am going to start with a book that's coming out next week. It's by an Irish author, Niall Williams, and it's called Time of the Child. It is set in a small town, rural town, on the furthermost edge of Ireland called Faha. If that sounds familiar to listeners, it's because his previous novel, This Is Happiness, was set in Faha. And it was wildly popular. And I will say that this book also seems to be, the word is getting out, because I checked last night on the reserves at the library, and there are already 70 reserves on it.
Now there'll be 90 in another hour, and I'm going to have to wait longer. But okay.
Well, you can't reserve this weekend, so. Well,
that's right. Okay.
Wait till Monday.
All right.
Well, maybe they can hurry. Is it stopping today?
It's already shut down.
Okay.
Okay. Well, anyway. So one of the things that Niall Williams does so well, and I think it's why his books are popular, is that at least in Faha, he immerses you in a time and a place. And in this book, Time of the Child, it is 1962. It is the Christmas season. And it opens with the Sunday of First Advent, the first Sunday in Advent. And it focuses on the doctor and his oldest daughter who lives with him. And they're at Sunday Mass, and they're observing the minister who is faltering through his sermon because he has dementia. But it's like egregiously obvious. Mm. And that sort of begins, and the doctor is aware of this. And then he goes through his day, and he goes through house calls. And later in the day, he sees the priest by the River Shannon, standing there at the edge, too close to the edge. It's dark. He gets out. He goes to him. The priest doesn't recognize the doctor. But it's the way he handles the doctor, gets him in the car, and gets him back to the house in preserving his dignity.
Yeah.
And this is all this first beginning of this immersion of place and time. And also, in the middle of the day, the doctor, Jack Troy, has been struggling with his conscience because he knows that he stood between a love relationship of his daughter and a young man in the village. So the next day, then, we're immersed in this a family who is getting ready for the Christmas fair. And a young boy, Jude Quinlan, is herding all of the cattle out in the pre-dawn hours to the road to the fair at the in the middle of town. And so all of that is going on. And then, later at night, the boy is wandering around town waiting for his father to come out of the pub. So again, you can see a lot is going on, and this is that immersion. And I'm emphasizing that because it's very peaceful, but it also, you need to be patient with it. Because at the end of the night, while the boy is waiting for his father, he finds a baby abandoned at the back of the church. And he takes the baby to Dr. Troy. And Dr. Troy and his daughter take the baby in. Now, in 1962 Ireland, an abandoned baby was the property of the church and of the state. The doctor knows that there are enormous consequences that can happen here. So this is what unfolds in the weeks leading up to Christmas. And you're in a village where everybody knows what everybody else is doing. You just have to sneeze and they hear you. So how do you hide a baby in the house? And what happens? What are the plans that Dr. Troy comes up with to make sure that he doesn't revisit something that happened years and years ago where a young woman with an unmarried woman with a baby trusted him? And I won't go into detail about that. It's a wonderful book in that it's so life-affirming about the good people and the good life that they live in this village. They're not perfect. They have a lot of quirkiness, but there's this integrity that is there, this self-resilience, or self-reliance that is there, and a resilience. They're good people that come together in generosity. I'll just
you have
say
in
that.
Your tears talking about this book.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. And he writes with this Irish lyricism too. And so the language is very much of the time and place.
Time of the Child by Niall Williams, which you can't reserve right away. So write it down.
Monday. Come Monday.
Time of the Child by Niall Williams, a recommendation from Cassie Rose. On the book program on 89.7 NPR News, I'm Christopher Purdy, and you're Nick White, and you're going to give us
at least I think I am. Otherwise, I'm wearing the wrong person's pants. I am recommending a page turner, something that has been referred to as a commercial book, Robert Harris's novel Conclave, which I understand has been made into a movie, and I haven't seen it yet, but I will.
Give it away.
I won't give anything away, but this is about the election of a pope. The pope is dead. Cardinals have gathered in Rome to elect a new pope. And on the outset, that may seem to be not perhaps the most exciting premise for a novel. But it is. It's gripping. It is these cardinals coming together. And it deals with age-old themes of men dealing with their own ambitions and different visions for the church, which they refer to the Catholic Church as the universal church, and who wants to be pope, and what does it mean to want to sort of lead this church. It's sort of centered around the main character of Cardinal Lomelli, who is tasked with running this conclave, and he is had a complicated relationship with the former pope, but he is also a man who is struggling with his fate, with his faith and certainty. And he delivers this sermon on certainty and that there needs to be room and faith for doubt. And this sort of causes a great stir among the cardinals. But the plot really is about him going from sort of cardinal to cardinal, trying to see who has the votes, who's going to be put up, what team is he on? And you get to learn these like really, really interesting characters who are sort of like cardinals from around the world. And I won't give anything away, but there's a lot of twists and turns in this book. There's a lot of you think you know a cardinal and then something will come out about them. And it sort of changes the direction of who is going to rise to the papacy. And like I and I'm coming at this as someone who is not a Catholic at all. Like I'm a lapse Baptist. And so it's all sort of very strange, interesting world for me to enter into. You know, abstractly, I think, you know, I sort of feel like Aretha Franklin talking about Taylor Swift gowns, beautiful gowns, you know, for the Catholic Church. But like it sort of like was like a really interesting sort of window into a world that I know very little about.
But you said it is as the book is the movie was riveting, and that's all I'm going to say about it. But the book you call a page turner.
It's a page turner. Yeah. I found it like it's very tightly written. Not a word is wasted. It's a page turner. And one of the things that I sometimes have qualms with books that are considered page turners is that they forget to give attention to character and give enough character development for me as a reader. And I felt that Harris did a great job of giving us wonderful character development, especially for the Cardinal Lomelli, the main the sort of protagonist of the piece, because I really found his wrestling with faith and doubt as he sort of moves through the bureaucracy of this church to be really interesting and compelling as, you know, who are they going to vote for Pope?
Yeah. Conclave by Robert Harris, yes. Recommended by Nick White on The Book Show. And we're going to take a break and come right back. Don't go away.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
We are back with All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Our panel is here, Nick White from the faculty at The Ohio State University. He is an author and professor of creative writing. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Metropolitan Library from the Whetstone Branch, bringing us quick picks. And Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, is here. Her blog, by the way, you should read her blog. It's thelongestchapter.com, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. I would like another quick pick from Chris Hickey and the library.
So this is a very special one. So it is Native American Heritage Month in this country. And so in all of our branches, you can go in and we have collections, we have displays with Native authors. And I want to call your attention to a quick pick that is coming out next week. Robin Wall Kimmerer, she wrote Braiding Sweetgrass, which is a much loved book. This new one is called The Service Berry, Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World. And it's a beautiful read. I find nature reads comforting, even if they're challenging. And this book is not a gentle read, but it's a comforting read. She centers her essay, and it does feel more like an essay. It's short. This is less than 150 pages, on the service berry. And we have those trees in Ohio. And she talks about the history. She talks about it from the Native American perspective. So as you are reading this, you're really getting a sense of culture. You're getting a sense of history kind of centered around this particular tree. And one of the things she talks about is the gift economy. And so if you're thinking about, let's say you have a service berry tree, or you grow tomatoes or zucchini, when you have an abundance of something that you have created, or it's a gift from the earth, you're more likely to share it. So let's say you have an abundance of service berries. You give a bowl to a friend. The friend makes a pie. She shares the pie. There's a sharing that happens with that doesn't really happen if you go to the store and you buy a container of raspberries. It's a different experience. And she really kind of speaks to our connection with our planet and what the earth gives us and the gratitude that comes from that. And she explores that in this book, and it's beautiful. If you're looking for a good holiday gift, I think this could be a lovely gift for somebody. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding it a comforting read, even though it is, it's about very real, very, there's definitely a lot of climate change she talks about. She's an environmental biologist. She's a professor, and she's received the MacArthur Grant.
And she's a Native American woman.
She is. Yeah. She is. She is from the,
I think the Onondaga.
Potawatomi Nation. Right. So okay. She's an enrolled citizen of that nation.
Braiding Sweetgrass was recommended to me a few weeks ago by a friend of a friend, and I did read it. And I'm a city boy, and I don't, you know, I always had this kind of cynical view of mowing the lawn and things like that. And that book, I think, has changed my life. Because the perspective of that and what she meant by love of nature and sharing nature and the economy that you just, and gratitude, I think you have to be, I had to be of a certain age to understand that, to really incorporate that into who I would like to be. And that book helped me a lot, Braiding Sweetgrass. So I'm delighted to have this latest book. And you're right, they'll both be great gift ideas.
Yes, and I think this book definitely it could be life-changing as well. I think I'm going to be thinking about this for quite some time after. reading it.
Just remind us of the title one more time.
The title is The Serviceberry, and it's by Robin Wall Kimmerer.
And she also has some very interesting interviews on YouTube where she talks about her work and frankly, her philosophy. And they are well worth the time of anybody who'd like to know more. I mean, just putting that out there. Cassie Rose, what do you have for us now? You've had us in Ireland. You've had us weeping in Ireland. You know, you want to get us mad or something? Or
well, I'm going to get you intrigued.
Oh, good.
This is another book that is coming out, but it's soon. It's coming out the first week of December, I think it is. It's called Gabriel's Moon. It's by William Boyd. William Boyd is a prolific British author. One of my very all-time favorite books is Any Human Heart, which I would recommend highly. Gabriel's Moon is, if I were going to create a new title for it, I would say it's called The Reluctant Spy. This is about a travel writer, and it goes to the New Republic of Congo. So this is in the 1960s. And he's there on a travel assignment, but a friend of his who works for the new president, Lumumba, who is a historic figure. Anyway, a friend is in the ministry, and he says, why don't you come and interview Lumumba? And he does, and the reason is that the president wants to be able to tell his story. He just wants to talk to someone and who is not the BBC, not the New York Times. So anyway, this travel journalist gets on the airplane, and on the way home, he sees a woman who's reading one of his travel books, and everything seems fine, except that he sees the woman in his neighborhood, and then the next thing he knows, she's sliding into a booth at a restaurant with him, and she turns out to be with MI6. And she wants him to buy a drawing. That's it, to buy a drawing from an artist who lives in Cadiz, outside of Madrid. And he's like, well, what are you asking me for? Well, he happened to have do some deliveries for his brother, Sefton, who works for the British, a British ministry, but he's not in the Secret Service, supposedly. And so she thinks that he'll do this. Now, I'm simplifying this very much, but it's got a light tone to it. And here's this guy who's in his 30s. He's a travel writer, and he becomes a little bit infatuated with this woman, Faith Green. And so he does it. He thinks it's going to be a one-off, but pretty soon he learns that once you're in, you never get out. Mm-hmm. And it gets very complicated, and all these little things start to happen. And again, because he's a travel writer, and he's like thinking, okay, this is the last one I'm doing. I'm not doing this anymore. And it just keeps going. And there become almost two-line plot lines going on. He can't figure out what's happening. We can't figure it out either. And it just becomes something where you're on his side, and you get angry with him too, because he feels like he's a useful idiot, is what he calls himself. And he's just sort of the football of MI6. He doesn't really, can't figure it out. But it gets to be pretty, I wouldn't say gripping at the end as much as this, you can't believe what's going on, but it is believable. And what new level it brings him to. It's a great read. It's very, very much along the lines of William Boyd, how he writes, how he brings you into his story, and also how he develops a protagonist, because of how it's not as much you care about him, but he's very likable. You get kind of angry along with him, and then you sometimes look at him and say, oh, you fool, will you quit doing this? So you're engaged with him in that way. It's a great book.
Called Gabriel's Moon.
Gabriel's Moon by William Boyd.
Could you just tell us briefly about Any Human Heart? Because you mentioned that's very dear to you, and I think people would like to know more.
Yes, very different from this one. It's an epic novel of a young man that we follow through the 20th century. And it just is his life story, essentially. There's no one thing that happens that I could say it's about, but he goes through World War I, World War II. He goes, it's also about his relationships. And I think that there's one very difficult one that fails, that stays in his heart. And the way that Boyd writes it is that you, again, like with this character, you are so beside him and with him and going through life that you do not want that book to end. And yet, as it does, you just feel like you've been to this wonderful place and had just this soul-filling time. It's just a really good story. I know that sounds trite, but it is just a really good story.
This is The Book Show. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. We just heard from Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic, and her blog. How often do you update your blog? TheLongestChapter.com.
I think the pattern is really every other week. Okay. Some of it is, I find that I don't want to bombard people, at least the subscribers, with, oh, here's these new books coming out here or this, because I think people get tired of that, of in their email coming too much. And I also think that it waters down too much, that of all these books that are coming out. So I pretty much try to tailor it. Like, for example, I'm writing a new blog about just two books that I've read that I've really liked, that, and I also try to write about books that I don't necessarily talk about on the show, so that there's a balance there. So
good. Don't give it away. Make people go to the blog.
Yes. So it's just it's something that's tailored, I will say that, crafted.
TheLongestChapter.com, mm-hmm. Cassie Rose's blog. Nick White, you gave us the Pope. Now what do you have for us?
I am going to champion a short story collection by one of my favorite writers, a writer that I've spoken about a lot on this program, Mariana Enriquez, the Argentine writer who writes horror. She is probably right now our best living writer about horror. And Supernatural. Many of you who are listening probably remember me talking about her novel that was published, I think, maybe a year and a half ago, called Our Share of Night, which gave me nightmares. I had two distinct nightmares about this book. This book is a short story collection written by her and translated by Megan McDowell. I want to make sure that I mention the translator's name, too, because I think that's important. That's important literary work that often gets not the praise that it deserves. But this collection is more scary stories that are just riveting. And I think the question that I always come to her work is, what is it about her work that makes her stories sort of stick in my craw and stay with me long after I have put the book down? And I think it has something to do with the fact that her stories, her books, are always based in a real horror. She's from Argentina. She, you know, if you know anything about the dictatorship that happened there and that disappeared, the trauma that that country experienced, the collective trauma, you know, there's definitely like real horror to be mined there. And this short story collection has a bunch of sort of very, very scary stories, not for the faint of heart, but really riveting and gripping. Like, there's a town that is haunted by ghosts of the dead. I sort of have read a multitude of ghost stories, and when someone says they're going to tell me a ghost story, I kind of cross my arms. I'm like, okay, tell me the ghost story then. See if you can scare me. She does. It's like these are truly horrific ghouls. You have a hotel that is haunted by this young woman, based on a true story, a young woman that was found in the water tank at the top of the hotel that is haunted by that. You have a family whose faces start to melt off. You have a flock of birds that the story is all about, these flock of birds that used to be women, and what are their stories and how did they become birds? Like, these are really, really gripping, wonderful stories. I love this writer, but it's very, very dark and very scary. I'm teaching two courses next semester, one on horror writing and one on monsters in literature, and I'm going to be teaching her. I'm going to be teaching this.
What's the name of the collection?
Oh, the name of the collection is, it's a great title, A Sunny Place for Shady People.
It is a great title. You said real, it's based on real horror. Like, for example, does she draw from the history of Argentina, like the disappeared?
Yes, she does.
Is that what it is? Okay.
So, for example, I can speak more directly about the novel. The novel, Our Share of Night, it's a 600-page magnum opus, but it opens with this father and son who are traveling across Argentina, going to the father's wife. The mother has passed away, and you learn that sort of like how that came to be, but they're traveling across Argentina to the mother's family's mansion, and you learn that the family is in the occult and all of this stuff. But as they're traveling, you learn that the father can see the dead people, and in particular, he can see the disappeared. He can see people that are coming up on the road, they're dead. And as they're traveling, he realizes that his son can see them too. and what this means for his son, and how to live with the burden of history that becomes not just stories you hear, theoretical, but it's like they become sort of real, very much more real to you than they are for the average person because of this thing that he has. So that's like one example. The other example I was talking about was the in this particular collection, the short story about the woman who was found in a water tank at this hotel. Mm-hmm. That's based on a real hotel in Los Angeles that happened in the 70s, I think, that has like created this kind of like myth around this woman. And so that's based in like a true story too. Yeah.
So can you like reserve a room at this hotel?
I think so. I think I can't remember the name of the hotel, but it was also a hotel that was featured, I do believe, in one of the Ryan Murphy series on American Horror Story. Like he based a season of that show in that hotel, I think, but I'm forgetting the title of it.
It was the Ambassador Hotel, which is where RFK was killed in 1968. It was stigmatized with that until it was torn down a number of years ago.
I think this hotel is still standing.
Okay.
But don't quote me on that. But I think.
And before we go to our next break, we have a minute, Nick White. I just wanted to ask how your own writing is going.
Oh my God, $1 million question. Well, you know, it's always harder to write during the academic year as opposed to the summer and stuff. So I think, you know, I talked a lot about the Murakami book about running and being a writer last time I was here. And that book was immensely helpful for me. And I think, like, I talk a lot about my students about process. And I feel as if writers kind of fall on the spectrum between two kind of categories. Are you a timed writer or a word writer? When you sit down to write, are you going for like 1,000 words a day, or do you want to just spend 3 hours with your work? And that may mean focusing just on one page, one scene, one sentence. You know, I sort of fall between the two. I try to do my best to block off days that I am solely a writer. So for instance, as soon as we get through with this show, I'm going back to my office and I'm going to be writing.
I think Gustave Flaubert said, if you wrote one sentence, it was a successful day.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm going to keep that with me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody crochet that and send it to Nick White so we can put it
please,
on.
Please.
We're going to take a break right now and come on back to the book show. Don't go away.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.
We are back with the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm generally on the air Monday through Friday from 7 to 10 on our sister on Classical 101, but I get to take the day off and come and talk books and talk arts and culture on 89.7 NPR News, which I very much appreciate, especially with a panel like this one. Three friends, three wonderful people who share books with us every month. Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Dick White on the faculty at The Ohio State University and a very successful published author who, in about 20 minutes, is going back to his office and is going to write for the afternoon. And Chris Hickey from the Whetstone branch of the Columbus Library. And Chris Hickey has some more quick picks for us.
So I have a thriller for us, but okay. The new Paula Hawkins, she wrote The Girl on the Train, which was a huge hit. So this is her new one. It is called The Blue Hour. And it takes place largely on a small coastal island off of Scotland that is only accessible 6 hours at a time on a causeway. You can't take a boat there because of the cliffs and things like that. So it's an interesting island. So it is the home of an artist named Vanessa Chapman. And shortly before her death, she bequeathed her art to a foundation. And the art is on display. and a forensic scientist just happens to be going to this art show and discovers he's fairly certain that there is a human bone in one of her sculptures. And her husband had gone missing many, many years ago. Now, it's not that easy. This is a twisty, twisty book. So Becker, who works for the foundation and is an expert in Vanessa's art, decides to investigate. He works for the foundation, but he's not a person of means. So he's in this, you know, world of wealth, and he is not a person of wealth himself, but he has his own interesting connection to her art. So in this investigation, he goes to the island and speaks with a woman who lives there who was her companion or caregiver. It's all a little unclear who this woman is. And he has some very odd interactions with her. There's very much a theme of being trapped because, you know, you can't leave the island at any time you want. You can't get there anytime you want. So there's the island is very much, I think, its own character in this book. So she writes, there's letters, there's diary, there's letters. That's the only time we hear Vanessa's voice. Is through these her papers that he's going through and descriptions of her art. So she does a beautiful job weaving those together to make a really, this is a page turner. It's really good. And the title comes from that time of day when the blue hour, when the sun has set and the everything has a blue hue to it. And it's harder to see what's going on in that light. So she kind of draws from that as her title of the book. And everything is not as it seems. And it's just, if you're in the mood for a fun thriller, this is a good one.
That's a quick pick from the library.
This is a quick pick. Paula Hawkins.
Give us another one.
Okay. So I have another spicy romance.
Oh, spicy. Okay,
yes.
Good.
So Kennedy Ryan was a sold out headliner for the Columbus Book Festival. She is a romance author. This book is not a new book. She was self-published before, and now Hatchett is now representing her. So they are re-releasing her self-published titles. So this came out actually in 2021, but it's going to be new to a lot of people. It's called Reel, R-E-E-L, as in like a film reel. So it's part of a series called the Hollywood Renaissance. And it's about an actress named Neva, and she is an understudy in a play, and she plays the lead one evening, and a director named Cannon sees her, discovers her, and puts her in a film about the Harlem Renaissance. The two of them fall in love. It's spicy. It's consensual. It's very respectful. And
oh.
Kennedy Ryan is very good at writing the falling in love part, and her fans just adore her. Cannon has had a past relationship with an actress.
And this is the director.
That did not go well. This is the director. So there's you know, a ghost of a past relationship kind of over this. So Neva has a chronic illness, so there's some chronic illness representation in this book. So she has to figure out how to become a star while also dealing with this chronic illness. So Kennedy Ryan, she has many books, and they're going to be released one at a time. There's going to be a second book called Score in this series, and there isn't a release date yet, but you might be able to find it somewhere if you don't want to wait. The library does not have it, but just good spicy romance.
Spicy romances are always. Before I move on, I want to ask you one thing as a favor to remind everybody about Breeding Sweetgrass and the new one.
Oh yes,
because we're talking about potential gifts for.
Yes, potential gifts. So Robin Wall Kimmerer. So Breeding Sweetgrass was a bestseller. That would be a great gift. The new one, and this book comes out next Tuesday. It's called The Service Berry: Abundance and Reciprocity in the Natural World. Beautiful writing.
Yeah, that's a recommendation from Chris Hickey, and I can second that on both counts. We thank you for that. And let's see, Cassie Rose, what do you have for us?
I have a potential good holiday gift in my stack here. It's a book called literary journeys, mapping fictional travels across the world of literature. And it's actually, I've been pretty addicted to it. It basically takes the books like The Call of the Wild, As I Lay Dying are some of them, and also Dr. Zhivago. Those are examples in the book. So it's like two or three pages filled about a book, filled with illustrations, but it focuses on the journey, like in Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, Addie being taken over the day back home to be buried in Jefferson County. But it starts at the beginning with like the Odyssey and that Jules Verne, 80... Around the World in 80 Days. And then it goes into where travel becomes more like train or whatever. But the thing is that when I'm reading them, it's a revisiting of books that I've already read. It's also seeing books that I have meant to read but did not read. And also some surprising ones in the contemporary section with wonderful titles. I don't know the authors. I don't know the books. Like some of the titles, Butterflies in November, that came out in 2004, or The Sly Company of People Who Care, that came out in 2011, and Star of the Sea, a Joseph O'Connor book that came out that was wildly popular. So for just a general reader just saying, I want to find books that maybe I want on my bucket list or maybe that I want to discover, this is a perfect book for that. Or also, if you have a reader in the family, but you don't know what book to buy them because they read all the time and you can't imagine, you don't want to buy them a book they've already read, this is a book that might intrigue them. Because again, it's so beautifully done with all the illustrations, with the pull quotes, and it just becomes, like for me, like here was one called Transit by Anna Sagers. And it's Escape to Marseille Through Occupied France. It came out in 1944, and it's based on her experience. And it has these like beautiful illustrations and a little bit of the some facts about the author or the publishing of the book. And it just becomes something that you just want to keep looking through and reading. Or here's Paul Bowles' The Sheltering Sky from 1949, Travel Through the North African Desert. And so they focus on the travel, but then they do tell the story of the book. It's really beautifully done.
That does sound like a wonderful gift idea.
Mm-hmm.
That's a collection or anthology. Tell me again the title and just how people would find it.
Well, it is offered at the library, so that's another way that you can get it. Or if you want to figure out if you want to, if it's a gift item, you can check it out. It's called Literary Journeys, Mapping Fictional Travels Across the World of Literature. And the editor is John McMurtry.
And that's a gift idea or just a great read, a great book sort of just to pick up and just lose yourself in once in a while. From Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. This is All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. And Nick White, what is The Creation Lake?
Creation Lake by Rachel Kushner. This book, I think, is a finalist for a National Book Award, if I remember correctly. It's told through the point of view of this woman named Sadie Smith, not Zadie Smith, the novelist, but Sadie Smith, who is an ex-CIA agent who has infiltrated a commune in rural France that it may or may not be involved with plots of eco-terrorism. And she is no longer working for the CIA, but she is a spy for this corporation who are trying to do a possibly nefarious thing with the water source in France. And these eco-terrorists are maybe hatching a plot to thwart that effort. And she is sent in to sort of see what that is and try to figure it out. And then as she gets into this commune, you realize there's another mysterious figure named Bruno who is this man who lives in a cave in France who sends these emails, these cryptic emails to the group. And she's trying to figure out who this Bruno person is and find him. And you learn about her, and there's like it's told through her point of view. And so you really get into like what it's like to be her, to be this person who is constantly adopting personas. The writing is just, the story is gripping in and of itself, but Kushner is sort of one of those writers that is just so whip smart and can take something, take like the countryside of France or a petrol station or the caves and render it so beautifully in a way that you've never seen it or thought about it before. I'm a big fan of her novel, The Flamethrowers, which...
I love that book.
Yeah. That book was great.
Why? Tell me about it.
Talk about it, Cassie Rose. I remember the scenes of the desert and riding motorcycles on the desert, right?
Italian motorcycle that is specially made, and she spends time in Italy, and that's where she finds out about the Italian motorcycle. And it's just, it's a great book.
It's like... She's honing in on something. It's like that in abstract I know nothing about, don't know that I would care about, but she does this thing. She makes she's sort of so detailed and so knowledgeable about it that it just comes alive on the page, and that's what any good writer does, right? And so I was just, I'm not a spy novel person per se, but that's just sort of the initial threads of the book that you get in. You really learn that this book is really also about like what it means to be human, what it means to care about something, what it means to sort of be in a place, and what we take from the place. It might actually be a nice companion read to The Serviceberry in many ways.
The Creation Lake book.
Creation Lake by Rachel Kushner.
Yeah. By Rachel Kushner, a recommendation from Nick White. And how about a few more quick picks to sort of send us out?
So I'll share. This one is actually not a quick pick, but I wanted to talk about it because it's getting so much buzz. It's called How Does That Make You Feel, Magda Eklund, by Anna Montague. This is a debut novel for her. And it's not a terribly long novel. It's, less than 300 pages, but it's about a woman who turns 70 and takes a road trip with her friend's remains. So she has an urn. So you can see on the cover, there's an urn with a seatbelt around it. And her friend, Sarah.
With a seatbelt.
Shortly before she died.
Well, you don't want
it
to go flying.
Yes. She does talk about, you can't really, you put your, the mom arm seatbelt across the urn. Her friend Sarah, shortly before she passed, was planning this road trip for Magda's 70th birthday. And so Magda decides to go through with it and take Sarah along. It's a really interesting story about female friendship. And so the author, Anna, she wanted to do a deep dive into that and talk about the intimacies of it and how it is a little bit different than male, or it could be, at least according to her, different than male friendships, and the challenges of this friendship, because Sarah could be difficult, if things didn't go her way, she could be hard to be around. And again, we're in Magda's head, so we're not getting Sarah's side except for in some letters and correspondence. So Magda is a psychiatrist. So Anna kind of delved into some psychiatry textbooks to get some interesting mining of character material. So we get some very interesting patients of hers and her friendships with her male colleagues. If you liked the book less by Andrew Sean Greer,
I like that
very much.
Love that
it
book.
Has a similar feel to
oh.
it.
Oh,
She wanted to look at what does it mean to start your life over in your 70s? And she wanted to, and again, she's like 30. So she's not writing that from her own life. But she says she does have, she spent a lot of time around people in their 70s.
I should read that because I'm getting there. So that might be a
you
good
might
idea.
You might really enjoy this book.
How to Restart. Yes, I'm getting there. So give us the title and the author one more time.
How Does That Make You Feel, Magda Eklund? And it's such a therapist question. How does that make you feel? So,
And one more thing I wanted, Chris Hickey, to remind us about what's going on with the library and the catalog in our final minute.
So Westerville is joining the Central Library Consortium. They're still their own library, but we're sharing resources. Our catalog is frozen right now while we migrate all of their data. So when you come into our buildings, you can still check out, but you'll need to do that with staff.
So the library's open.
The library is open. You can return your materials. Another thing is the catalog is frozen. So right now, it's probably somewhat accurate by late day Sunday, it's probably not accurate, but we will help you find whatever it is that you need. But it just be patient with us. Your account is going to look weird until we can start to check everything in next week.
But it's for a very good reason, because you're expanding the library's reach.
Yes. Basically, it's a resource sharing. So it's giving you access to more.
I have to say thank you all, and I have to say goodbye for now to this edition of All Sides Weekend Book. Thank you, Nick White. Go home and write. Thank you, Chris Hickey. Go home and deal with the catalog. Thank you, Cassie Rose. Go home and read. And thank you all for joining us today. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for helping us make radio. Thank you, Marcus Charleston, our producer. And thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy for All Sides Weekend Books on 89.7 NPR News.